Welcome to another round of Boardroom or Miro Board. Today we talk retrospectives with Agile coach Maria. Let's go. First question. You've spent 2 hours in a team retro, but the only input you've heard is Dave's. Boardroom or Miro Board?
Boardroom. In Miro, Dave can't hog the space because everyone can add thoughts anonymously, online at the same time.
Correct. Next. You need the team to act on feedback fast, so you turn all those retro notes into Jira tasks instantly.
Miro all the way. And I can assign those tasks to teammates.
You're nailing this. Now, you see hundreds of sticky notes from the retro. A real mess. But you organize them into 5 themes in just seconds.
Miro, I basically get back an entire hour when I use its AI tools for clustering.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people running actually enjoyable and actionable retros in Miro. Get your first 3 boards free at Miro.com. That's M-I-R-O.com.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
I'm Commander Shepard, and this is my favorite Lorecast on the Citadel.
Welcome to the Mass Effect Lorecast, the podcast where we explore the vast universe of lore behind the Mass Effect games. We'll talk about all the details you may have missed, ask the hard questions, and more.
Spectres, welcome to the Mass Effect Lorecast. This is your host, Tom, or Robots, and I'm here with Sam Butt, why are you being called Sam Butt in the chat, Sam?
That might be because I have recently implemented Buttsbot into my streams on Twitch.
Okay. Yeah, so you've got some new toys you've been playing with on your streams. So, we'll talk about that at the end of the show, but that's awesome. Welcome back to the show. Sam, today we've been talking medical stuff. Today we are talking about diseases, diseases. It's going to be an exciting episode.
We're always excited to talk about pestilence and disease.
Mm-hmm. Everybody's favorite topic of conversation for the last few years.
Yes, we're not worn out from this at all.
No, no.
But we're going to talk about it.
Space disease.
If you're listening, then you're listening.
Yeah, so thank you for listening. But we took a little break for the holidays. This episode's a little bit late. We had to push it back, which means you're getting an episode when you're listening to this now, and then another one in just a little while. So congratulations, extra bonus episodes. Everybody's favorite topic of disease. Where do we start?
Well, to be honest, I'm not sure, because there's so many diseases listed in the Mass Effect lore. And they are of varying degrees and of depth to their explanations. So, I mean, everything from things that are quite well documented and explained, like Kepler syndrome, to the Thunowinuro megafluenza.
Say that again?
Thunowinuro. That's megafluenza.
You practiced this. But these are like weird alien space diseases that can kill humans?
Well, first, let's talk about humans. I'm pretty fond of them anyway.
I don't really like people.
Well, must have been awful.
I mean, think about it. We play Mass Effect. We're romancing all the aliens. We know everybody romances the aliens more than the humans. Most of our audience probably likes the aliens more than humans also, so.
There are more aliens than humans.
That's true. I'm not alone in this. Let's dive into humans. What real-world disorders and illnesses are there still in this future timeline?
Rolex syndrome. Yes. So yes. This is the condition that Joker deals with that causes him to easily break bones. This exists in real life, which I was surprised to find out because I never heard it called Rolex syndrome. It's more often called brittle bone disease, or for those medically inclined, osteogenesis imperfecta.
That's the fancy Latin one. Also the way that you conjure it while also conjuring demons.
Yeah, you got to stand in a circle of like orthopedic docs
and a few bones,
chanting
like a skeleton on one of those little hangy things like you see at the doctor's office, and then like some bones and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a group of genetic disorders, actually, not just one. There's 19 different disorders that lead to the same outcome, which is the bones being easily fractured. And after reading some about how it impacts people in our own world, Joker's case seems to be rather mild, I gotta be honest. I won't go into the details, the gruesome details about how it truly impacts people in our world. If you're curious about that, you can look that up. But let's just put it that Joker's situation seems to be, if he does have Rolex syndrome, that he could be much worse off, but it's still certainly a struggle that Joker has had to overcome. And you know, it's colored all of these parts of his persona. In the games, he kind of has a chip on his shoulder about not being able to do the same things that other Alliance personnel would do.
Yeah.
But he's still the best damn pilot in the fleet. So his condition of easily breaking bones is not in the way of that at all, because that's not how piloting works in Mass Effect. This is a condition that humans can be born with, and it's characterized by differing qualities and quantities of collagen production in the body. So in some cases, people can even have a blue-tinted sclera, which is the white part of your eyeball.
Wow.
I went back to see if Joker has this, but I couldn't find it, and I don't think that he does.
I've never noticed it either, yeah.
It would be a very, very subtle a very subtle thing to throw in there, which I don't think they would be inclined to do. And perhaps, you know, because it's genetic, only humans are affected by Vrolik syndrome. At least that's what's mentioned in Mass Effect. Mm-hmm. And sadly, if Joker has it in Mass Effect, then that means that they haven't cured it by 2183, right? So, but that can change in a post Mass Effect 3 galaxy, either through the synthesis ending, you know, where all organics combine with robots and then maybe it's not a thing anymore. Or if you chose destroy or control, then the galaxy isn't really governed by the same laws that dictated what kind of genetic manipulation would be legal or ethical.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so that one, I feel like we've all played the game. We're pretty familiar with Joker and his condition. What other real-world diseases are there?
Regrettably, it seems Alzheimer's is still affecting people in the galaxy, at least in the decades preceding Mass Effect 1. And I think most of us know Alzheimer's is a degenerative neural disease that progresses from the loss of memory to other more important brain functions. yeah. But the reason we know that this is present in the Milky Way in the game is because of the Mass Effect 2 DLC that gave us Kasumi. So this is kind of an unlikely connection here, because it's all tied into the introduction of something called gray boxes. Mm-hmm. The gray boxes, if you remember, are these little devices that can store memories, or more accurately, as the lore puts it, they are mnemonic neural recall stimulators. Very sci-fi.
Yeah.
And they were originally developed to slow the progression of Alzheimer's.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's interesting. I mean, this is an interesting topic. My wife runs a research lab. She actually has her own lab at a university, and they do research on brains and the way brains work and Alzheimer's and other diseases as well. So I can imagine these kinds of potential solutions. How do these gray boxes work?
So the gray boxes, most of the time, it seems they are implanted in people's brains. They help people remember things by literally like acting as a protocol for parts of the brain that help you with memory, like the amygdala. Mm-hmm. And so they make the amygdala chunk incoming stimuli. And when I say chunk, I mean like abstractly chunk them together into recognizable pieces so that you can know what you're bringing to your memory all in one piece. And that's according to the codex.
So it's almost like it streamlines and groups like stimuli so that your brain can better process it or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. So the way that it specifically does it, and I was very impressed that they wrote this into the lore. So it takes a shape or sensation from one memory and then it ties it on to the next memory and it does it with that memory. So it's like, you know, a square from one memory to a memory about a circle and then picking the circle and tying it to the next thing.
Right. So, or you remember the smell of the pizza you ate like as a child, and Alzheimer's often reduces your more recent recall. And so if you try to think about that pizza you ate yesterday, you're recalling the same kind of smell, but from a more distant memory.
Exactly. It's helping you remember by forming this chain of links, which lets the person recall it more easily. But this seems to go for devices that are located within the brain and perhaps its intended use, not the external device, this gray box we see Kasumi with in the DLC loyalty mission. When they are outside of the brain, these devices, the gray boxes are usually accessed with some kind of special reading device, and you almost always need a decryption key, because if you're going to go to the lengths to lock memories away, not because you need it, but because you just want to lock it away from people, then you're probably going to go for the added security.
Yeah, well, I could totally imagine a device that can that you can implant memories into being highly useful, but also if it's recalling memories that are very valuable or secret, being something to keep from other people for sure.
Yeah, and I can see this being a wide application. Like you would have a market in the economy for this, for not just like people who are being awful spouses.
Oh, sure. Cheating,
But also people who are in like high level, very high security clearance jobs where they learn a lot of things that they probably should forget when they leave.
Government secrets, or even just on a personal level, things like recalling the actual events of that car wreck you were in so you can prove that you weren't the one at fault. Sure, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Any of that stuff
or
would be valuable.
Conveniently forgetting the events of the car wreck to prove that you were not the one at fault, right?
Right.
And you know what? Since we're a lore podcast and we're on the topic of gray boxes, let's go into a rabbit hole here of lore. It seems that when Synthetic Insights, the company who developed this, first released the gray boxes into the economy in 2140, right away, people started considering them out of their intended medical use just to upgrade themselves. So just like we were talking about, you know, they may have been developed for Alzheimer's.
Right.
But they were immediately reappropriated.
Right. These are valuable in other ways, too. So let's use them that way. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's never happened before with inventions. Yeah. No, it happens all the time.
When has technology ever advanced before ethics could?
Yeah, pretty much everything.
Every time. But the reason that we know this is because the codex entry actually fucks up. We've been doing this almost 100 episodes now, and I have really yet to find such a colossal mistake in the codex. And I'm speaking in hyperbole here because it's not that big, but it says that Synthetic Insights released this product in 2184 and says right afterwards, quote, "Gray boxes were hailed as a way humans could level the playing field between themselves and the Salarians, whose natural eidetic memories gave them an advantage."
Did you say 2184 or 2140?
2140.
Okay, I think you said 84. So 2140.
I misspoke.
I just want to be clear because I didn't know if you were referencing something else at first. But 2140.
Yes, indeed. 2140. not 2184. Not 2184. Don't listen to me. This is my brain right now.
Okay, good. Everyone who's listening to us on their computers is like, oh God.
So 2140, it says that's when it was released. And then they were hailed as this way to level the playing field between humans and Solarians because Solarians have this photographic memory. Mm-hmm. But that can't be the case if humans didn't encounter another intelligent alien race until 17 years later in the First Contact War, which was 2157.
Right. Now, you could say it was released in this date and 17 years later was hailed as a way of, like, originally designed for medical reasons. 17 years later was realized a way to bring humans up to par with an alien species. Like, but it's not phrased that way.
I suppose. Yeah. And I'm not like taking a phrase verbatim from the wiki right now. I'm ripping this verbatim from the codex. So at best, I think it's misleading to say, you know, following the release in 2140, gray boxes were hailed as a way humans could level the playing field.
It sounds like that's how people responded at the date of the release rather than 17 years later when they realized, oh, this might be another use for it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, checkmate EA, you messed up in your codex and I'm going to be that guy. Mm-hmm. Dear editor, last week you put out an article and you actually said 2140 when I think you meant 2160.
Yeah. BioWare, if you want to get back at Sam for this, you just need to hire him so that he can write more codex entries and be one of the guys writing the lore. And then when he messes up, somebody else on another podcast will point it out.
I'm quite the copy editor, though. and I feel like, you know, it's part of my daily job duties. So I will put that out there. But I was obviously speaking facetiously. I think 2140 is just a typo. So it was likely just meant to be 2160 or 2170. But how, you know, more from the codex, because the implant procedure of a gray box requires the brain to irreversibly shift its workload to the machine, these bugs or attempted removal of the gray box for maintenance purposes could lead to incapacitating brain damage.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Hey, Doc, I'm seeing orange and I taste like Big Bird. What?
Taste like Big Bird. Yeah.
Can you please come into my office ASAP? Right.
Well, also, if the brain matter is getting used to being fed information in this new format and you've got that working in your brain for a few years and then all of a sudden it shuts off or just doesn't work as well, then it's going to throw the rest of the brain for a loop. Because it's going to be going, okay, this is how I process memory and information now. And all of a sudden now it's not being fed that. And you're just like, you're going to have holes in your...
It even mentions software bugs. I'm just thinking about with a hyper commercialized society, like, oh man, do you remember that one time that we went to see the movie and we were so stoned? It was so funny. I'm trying to remember it, dude, but all I'm getting right now are like ads for Thompson's teeth.
right. Every time I eat pizza, I think of your mom and it's driving me nuts.
Like, you form some very strange Pavlovian connections that way.
Yeah.
You literally operant condition yourself with a bug. But for this reason, the codex says, gray boxes soon became used only by those with a dire need for photographic memories because the risk was just too high. So
makes sense.
It also mentions that those with a dire need were researchers and spies. Interesting, they forgot to mention memory loss patients.
Or medical patients, but okay.
Yeah, but you know, oh well, who cares if grandma can remember what the last time she took her meds?
Right, even though this device was actually built for grandma specifically, and now we're just giving it to researchers and spies.
Yeah, and I imagine with the human lifespan getting into lucky if you reach 150 in Mass Effect, then Alzheimer's might be an even bigger concern.
Absolutely. As somebody who, like I mentioned before, is married to a spouse who researches those types of things, one of the things that the medical community understands now about diseases like Alzheimer's is not that they're new. They feel like new diseases that humanity has really stumbled on in the last few decades, right? But no, that's not the case. It's that human beings are living long enough for those diseases to become significant and are dying less of the things that used to kill us before those things would have taken root. So these diseases have been with humanity for forever. Most of the time, people just didn't live into their 80s or 90s.
Mm.
So we never got to the point where that's the thing that was killing us, because it was always the heart attack or the stroke or the whatever, you know, bad nutrition. Who knows? Mm. Right. So, yeah, absolutely.
And probably as we keep progressing through the modern era and as life expectancies kind of plateau, that'll provide a good window of time to measure whether or not Alzheimer's is actually becoming more common.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the question about it, is that, like, yeah. Anyway. So, okay. Back to Mass Effect stuff. So on the same topic though, this means that there could be more cybernetics just like floating around out there, like a black market of these things or whatever.
Yeah. And in brains too, you know, there could be, but in this case, I kind of doubt it. That's because the Alliance ends up banning the sale of them and implanting them in 2175. Now, I'm pretty sure they got this year right. Mm-hmm. In 2175, because of an incident with an Alliance spy who went by the name Abraham Rumoy. Rumoy was actually Keiji Okuda, the lover of Kasumi Goto. And he accessed and sold classified data that, according to Kasumi, those secrets could start wars and topple governments. So something you might want to put on that gray box and, you know, keep out of the wrong hands, I guess. But the codex tells us that Keiji was almost caught, but then prosecuting attorneys couldn't use the gray box as evidence because the Alliance court system prohibits self-incrimination.
Oh, weird. Interesting, because it's his memories.
I loved that little bit of lore.
Yeah, his memories, which would incriminate him, so it's not legal.
Right. Isn't that an amazing bit of lore? Because it's like, it's sci-fi, right? But that is so how a lawyer would think.
Absolutely. And it ties into our, you know, like the Bill of Rights, right? Like this is modern day law into the future and how it would have to deal with things like cybernetic implants. Yeah, this is also the weird, we've talked about this before, this weird place where like Mass Effect starts to butt up to being kind of cyberpunk, and then it backs out a little bit. It's like, this is a cyberpunk dystopia kind of thing, and we're not going to go quite that far.
It's like whenever we hear enough about Earth lore in Mass Effect, not like the colonies or wherever, or the Citadel, but whenever we hear enough about Earth lore, like specifically shortly after and before the First Contact War, it sounds hyper cyberpunk.
Yeah.
There was a second American Civil War.
Yeah.
The Statue of Liberty got blown up. Like, yeah.
It's like the writer's really flirting with that idea, and they're like, yeah, but we don't want to quite go that far. So we have to have reasons why that got reined in or whatever. Yeah, it's interesting. It's interesting.
And on the note of those prosecutors, by the way, as you may know, I listen to some court cases for work. So I'm watching a lot of like trial streams. There's a lot of argument over procedure. And I got to say, if the prosecutors who were trying to like level charges at KG because he stole such high level secrets that they could start wars and topple governments, and those attorneys were incapable of actually getting a conviction because they couldn't use the gray box from KG's own mind. Those sound like some shitty prosecutors.
Right. Yeah, it seems like a way you could work around that somehow.
Yeah.
I'm not a lawyer, though. Well, cool. Well, tell you what, we need to take a quick mid-break, but then we've got more diseases to talk about. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Spit it out. Or are you trying to build suspense?
You're so dense, sir. Obviously, I do not know as much about human relationships as I thought.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Protect your dream home with American Family Insurance. And you can weather any storm. You'll also save up to 25% by bundling home, auto, and life. American Family Insurance. Get a quote. Find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Discounts may not apply to all coverages on an auto or home policy. Discounts do not apply to life insurance policies. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating companies, American Family Life Insurance Company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
That's funny. I hit the coming back from the mid-break button accidentally. So these are going to be flipped.
It's backwards day.
It's backwards day. But we need to shout out our patrons. Thank you to our patrons, including our newest patron, Cade F., for signing up on patreon.com/MassEffectLoreCast. And on that page, you can get access to ad-free episodes and bonus episodes and t-shirts and all sorts of awesome stuff. So, and even joining us on a future episode, which things are a little bit out of order today because we're not doing this on a Friday, but will be the last Friday of the month as usual, which is the 27th. So if you'd like to join us, you can sign up or just stay signed up and then come join us. Also, we are going to shout out our Shepherd tier patrons, Kolkashins, Kirisi, Lieutenant Tosino, Shep Valkyrian, that's Spectre J, and William. And thank you to them and all 70 of our current patrons. You guys are awesome. We also normally read out a new review, but we don't have any new ones. So if you'd like to leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, we'll read it out on a future episode of the show, or you can rate us on Spotify. That's helpful as well. And Sam, what number is this episode? You're muted. He's gonna unmute. Oh, you're still muted. You're like double muted. Still muted.
I'm still muted.
There you go. Now you're back.
So when I hit the mute button on the mixer, it muted me on Zoom.
Oh, wow.
And then vice versa. So that was confusing. Yeah. Anyway, I'm here. I have a new mixer and I'm still trying to learn how to figure it out, but we are at number 98.
That's two away from 100.
Two away. And so this is the last week that I'm going to ask our listeners to respond to a survey that I've put up asking you for your favorite moments of the show. Any moment, anything that made you bust out laughing, or maybe you cried. I cried during Pipe Man's drunken bagpipe rendition of Vigil. Anything like that. We want to hear about it because we're doing this to take a celebratory look back at those funny, moving, impactful moments that we've all shared so far for episode 100. We're going to do like an 80s style, best of
montage, like a montage episode. Yes, that sounds awesome. Make sure you do that. Check it out. The link will be in the description of the show. You know it is when you listen to a podcast or look at a video, you can always hit the like see more info and there's just more words. Do that. You'll find the link. But yeah, thank you again, everybody, for being here for almost 100 episodes. That is amazing. You guys are the best. And we've got more lore to talk about. So here we go.
Message coming in. Patching it through.
I am sovereign, and this station is mine. I like the sound of that.
It feels so weird with those backwards, but I'm just going to leave it in there, and I'm not going to re-edit it. All right, so talking about like human diseases and Alzheimer's, when you proposed this episode, I totally didn't think that this is where we were going to go with it. But now that we've talked about the human stuff, let's talk about diseases that affect the other races, because we're just one of many different races, right? Like, we encounter the, what, the plague on Omega in Mass Effect 2. What other prominent ones are there?
That's right. And we never learned too much about that plague, by the way, other than the fact that it was engineered by the collectors to try and sow division and make the humans look like bad guys because they, along with the Vorcha, were the only people who couldn't get sick by it and then more easily abduct them. So to bridge that gap of human and what would we call them, zoonotic diseases or like xenonotic?
Xeno. I think xeno makes more. Zoo would be like animal, right? Like xeno would be
right.
Alien species. So
xeno diseases.
Yeah.
Let's talk about a disease from Andromeda that apparently can affect every Milky Way race. It's very ominously named. TH-314.
That's super weird. It's super weird that a disease in another galaxy would somehow be able to infect, like, maybe one or two of them. Like, yeah, they just happen to have a biology that, even that's weird. Even on our own planet, it's weird when, like bird flu jumps from birds to other animals or pigs. To,
right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, even that's, like, very rare and maybe, weird.
Maybe the bird flu would be so, like, catastrophic for the Turians. I don't know.
maybe. what if they have like a same like seed, you know, the whole theory about like life forms being seeded from space, like the DNA came from like a meteor that struck the earth. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
And so what if that came from, what if there was a planet out there that blew up and parts of it went in different directions. And so some of it landed on Earth and some of it landed over there. And it had like the root of like evolution that both evolved into birds somehow. And so their birds are basically just more evolved versions of our birds, which eventually become Turians. And so therefore
bird
have
person.
Genetic similarities.
Yeah. And by the way, TH-314, the name of this virus.
It sounds like the movie that what's his face did before Star Wars, Lucas. Isn't that
which George, one are you talking about?
George Lucas's first film was called THX-1138.
I wonder if they drew inspiration from that, but I'm looking at the number 314 and I keep thinking, okay, the First Contact Wars alternate name, the you know, Relay 314 incident, but also you remember the N7 Day teaser had that, you know, 314.
Yeah.
So prominently displayed. So something about the number 314 people at BioWare are psyched about.
Right.
When it comes
to, it's all a reference to like a biblical verse or something.
So, yes,
this is
like
Thessalonians
3:14.
It's like Thessalonians chapter 3, verse 14. What is that? You keep talking. I'm gonna look this up.
What did that famous politician call it? Corinthians 2. 2 Corinthians. I forget. Anyway, we don't need to give him more.
Okay,
time.
So here we go. Real quick. We go. Thessalonians 3:14. If anyone does not obey our instructions in this letter, take special note of that person so as not to associate with them, so that they will be put to shame.
There you go.
That's
what this virus is. We don't actually know much about this specific pathophysiology of the disease. I learned that word during an episode of House, and now I'm going to use it like I'm smart. Mm-hmm. So we don't know how it affects the organs inside a host, but we ultimately know that it kills most of the infected people, but it's exceedingly rare and no cure exists.
Mm-hmm.
And it happens in three stages. It's always rule of threes, right?
Yeah.
So in the first stage, people who are infected with it are only spreading it and they don't know it because it lies dormant and it doesn't have any symptoms. And in that stage can go on forever.
Mm-hmm.
Or it can advance to stage two.
Like ignorance.
Yeah.
Like you don't know you're ignorant, but you think you know things, and then you share those things with other people, and then you spread your ignorance.
Yeah, exactly. So and that can go on forever, or yeah. Or it can advance to stage two, advanced dumbness.
Yeah.
That's when you act physically aggressive about how dumb you are based off of stupid preconceptions.
The note here says the victim becomes violently paranoid. So yeah, there you go.
Yeah, exactly.
That's actually the stage two.
So
like he's not joking. This is stage two.
This is actually stage two of TH-314. I was making a joke, but for those of you who are already well acquainted with this quest in Andromeda, you're probably already laughing. But so Physical stressors, like being awakened from cryosleep, can actually trigger stage two.
Son of a bitch.
Send them into being violently paranoid. And then I don't really know how it reaches stage three. I guess it just does. But in stage three, the disease can become very contagious through the air and then transmitting it to pretty much any species, any known species, before it kills the original victim.
Okay. Like ignorance.
Doesn't seem like a good game plan for a virus who wants to survive, I think, because that's a very narrow window. But
yeah, I mean, this is one of those things in biology is that, for we were talking about viruses, right? Like, there's a reason why viruses, most viruses, don't kill the hosts very quickly, is because it actually reduces their ability to spread because they're killing their own platform, the thing they're living on, right? It's why things like the common cold are so common and insidious, but yet only give us mild symptoms, is that they don't kill the host, so that they can keep on passing from one person to another indefinitely. And that's also a reason, and I know I'm going on a tangent here, it's also a reason why the common cold is actually a selection of many, many different kinds of viruses that have all over time probably been much more deadly, but through evolutionary means have actually reduced their deadliness so that they can survive.
With our collected powers. What was the intro to Captain Planet?
Their powers combined.
Yeah, with our powers combined, we form the common cold, a chew. Stage three is much less of a laughing matter because it kills the victims always if it progresses to stage three. And we know about this disease because of Andromeda and a quest in it where there's a woman named Ruth Becker. She was a carrier of TH314, and she was skirted around the typical screening process in the initiative when they were first getting on the ARCs by her nephew. And she ultimately made it onto ARC Hyperion. And she wakes up and realizes that she's in stage three. So she steals a shuttle and then tries to self-destruct, but she's kidnapped by the extremist Angaran faction, the Rokar. They notice that she's diseased, but they can't get infected.
Yeah.
So they notice she's diseased. They can't get infected. This is an ultra, ultra contagious disease for all of the Milky Way races. And there's no way that she would have been allowed on the initiative if they knew. And then the Rokar plot to use her as a weapon to kill off all of the Milky Way invaders.
Right, right. Spread the disease. Yeah.
Yeah, so you can free her. You can convince her to go back into stasis until there's a cure discovered. And then that's that. And it doesn't appear anyone else was infected, which is remarkable if you are contact tracing Ruth Becker into some pretty high traffic areas. But yeah, kind of remarkable. It doesn't spread that much. We don't know a lot about how it affects the organs, just that you get violently paranoid and then you die.
That's it. Well,
yeah.
All right.
So there's another one here, which I think all of our Elcor aficionados are going to love. This one is very well written. It's called the Fortinbras Plague. And yes, it is named after Shakespeare.
Okay.
So, first of all, the doctor who named this is an Elcor ENT. An Elcor ENT doc. For those who don't know, that's ear, nose, and throat. And he goes by the name Yorick. And he is a huge fan of Shakespeare.
That's awesome. Wait. So he chose the name? Like, he chooses to go by the name?
He chose the name Yorick.
That's so funny. That would be like a human going by the name of some, like, Elcor writer.
Playwright.
And, like, loving Elcor written stuff or something. That's amazing.
Yeah. And so he even auditioned for that all Elcor cast of Hamlet that we hear about on the Citadel.
Nice.
And according to him, he made like second fiddle to someone. I forget who. But Yorick wasn't his birth name. But he chose to legally rename himself because he thought his given one was plain.
Sometimes I feel like I'm not eccentric enough, and maybe as I get older, I need to come up with some sort of like, you know, I'm just really into this. I'm just going to rename myself.
I'm just going to go by Shabadoo.
Because I just like Shabadoo.
Yeah, why not?
I love Mass Effect. I'm going to rename myself Commander Shepard.
Yeah, and then get irrationally angry at anyone who doesn't call you that. Yeah.
Right, right. No, my first name is Commander. Get it right.
So Yorick here names the Fortinbras plague after the character in Hamlet because it always swarms in the end and destroys it all.
Dear God.
And it's hard to take it seriously when he's always quoting Shakespeare throughout this book, but it's discovered aboard the Quarian Ark to Andromeda, and we learn about this through the book Mass Effect Annihilation.
Okay.
So it's one of those external pieces of media that, you know, if you love the game series, even if you've played through it like 100 times, maybe you never picked up the books, so this is all new to you. But now that we've had some laughs, let me tell you about how well-written and devastating this virus is. It is the most fleshed-out disease, pun intended, in any Mass Effect book, game, piece of media, I mean, you name it.
This is getting dark.
You look troubled.
You used fleshed out in a really disturbing way.
We'll get to that.
Okay.
We'll get to why this virus outs the flesh.
Mm-hmm.
It was artificially made from the most infectious and deadly diseases impacting almost every Milky Way species. So it was made by people, maybe not human people, but people. Mm-hmm. And it mutates very easily. It can spread through the air and live on surfaces for a while. And for every person it infects, about 22 to 26 more will be infected directly from them. For reference, COVID-19's Omicron subvariant BA.4 has an R-naught, which is how many people can get infected, of about 18.6. That makes it about as contagious as measles, which is an interesting coincidence because the virus here, the Fortinbras plague, was made using traits from the measles, as well as a sorry cyanophage, Kepler syndrome, a Turian disease called Titan's tears, and the volus equivalent of chicken pox named Yoctan.
Wow. Okay. So what are the symptoms? And like, what happens if someone gets it on the Ark? And like, I mean, it's infecting so many different races with this weird like amalgamation of different things that affect. Like, how does it? Tell me more. This
like
sounds complicated.
Frankenstein of,
yeah,
or should I say Frankenstein?
Frankenstein
of all of these different terrible viruses.
That's not a good accent.
And the symptoms are roughly the same across everyone. Maybe because it's compiled from so many different races that it's so transmissible across races, and has these ubiquitous symptoms. But it starts with copious projectile vomiting.
Wonderful.
That's what the lore tells us. Mm-hmm. That's how it starts. Mm-hmm. And then coughing, fever, chills, nausea, flu-like symptoms. Man, I feel like we've heard that phrase. I just realized after saying it, I feel like we have heard collectively as a society that phrase so many times over the past 2 years that I have a little bit of PTSD from it.
Yeah. Yeah.
But anyway, it turns, this is the part that's weird and unique. It turns your sweat into a sweet smell.
Okay.
I'm not sure if that's actually something that happens in real world diseases and disorders, but I feel like that's plausible.
I feel like that's familiar in a weird way. If anybody knows, if anyone's a doctor out there knows like, oh yeah, this disease does that, I feel like they're pulling that from something.
It had to be. Maybe they pulled it from their ass.
Something other than, well.
I was joking because, of course, your ass sweats a lot.
Maybe they got... God. Anyway, okay, let's keep going.
So the lore tells us it's the body. It's because the body is already beginning to start consuming its own sugars to fuel the viral replication process. So that's just how it starts. That is how it starts, and it progresses quickly. Within a few hours, infected people start developing sores and they are different shades of blue, and they can burst open.
Weird.
Ew.
Also, right? Also weird. Blue sores. Okay.
Blue sores. Dabba-dee-dabba-dai. And then people get super violently hungry.
Hmm. So it's like they get the munchies?
They get super munchies.
But like super violent munchies. Like
violent, like...
like punching your mom because she's standing in front of the fridge too long because you need the...
You better not stand between me and that fucking bread pudding, I tell you what.
Yeah, right, right. Ugh. Mom, get out of the way. I just want to eat all of this stick of butter right now.
And it gets worse. That was just within a few hours that people start getting sores, and then they burst open, and then they're super hungry. This is a very chaotic sequence of events.
Mm-hmm. This sounds like a really bad day.
Right. First, you had copious projectile vomiting, and then you're like coughing, and then you've got a fever and chills and nausea, and then you smell sweet for no reason, and then you start developing these sores of blue, and then they burst, and you're hungry. Like, yeah. What is going on here?
Ow, my sores. Give me some food. Ow, my sores.
And you're coughing and vomiting.
Yeah.
Hopefully not at the same time. That sounds explosive.
Ooh.
About a half day later... So literally like 12 hours later from onset of virus, you're struggling to breathe from edemas. Is it pronounced edema?
I think so.
Edemas swelling on your throat and chest.
So it gets all like, yeah, like they're.
Yeah. So yeah, it's on your throat and chest, and these are swollen. Like swelling rapidly.
Yeah.
And right before death, this is how fast it progresses, by the way. We're talking 12 hours in, and now I'm jumping to right before death. Mm-hmm. So right before death, people start hallucinating and losing their mind and attacking other people at random.
Mm-hmm.
And this is because of a complication from the measles, whose name I can't pronounce and no one would know anyway, which causes the brain to swell inside of the skull.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
I promise. Mm-hmm. And within a day, most people die. Except for some Elcor who managed to persevere.
Because they have brain cavities that are large enough compared to the size of their brains for the swelling not to kill them.
Maybe it's because they have such insane ENT issues that they somehow mitigated the onset of the virus for a little bit. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
But they ultimately, I mean, this is like a near perfect kill rate, right? So the deaths for the Volus, though, are particularly gruesome. And if you're like easily grossed out or triggered, like this is a trigger warning, so you might want to skip this because it's pretty graphic. The deaths of the Volus are the worst because of the insane swelling coupled with the edemas and their pressurized suits. And they effectively end up exploding into blue liquid within their suits.
I kind of thought that this is where it was going.
And I cannot imagine how intolerable the pain would be.
Oh, God, no. Yeah. No, have you ever, like, I mean, have you ever been bloated because you ate something? You feel like your stomach's going to explode. Or had, like, yeah. I mean, we've all eaten too much. Now, imagine that across your entire body times 10. Yeah.
Ooh. Yeah. Ooh. And at some point I would just hope that I get knocked out before exploding. But yeah, that the deaths for the Volus are really bad.
Yeah. So wait, do we know who created this?
Major spoilers here. It was created by the Corian Ark's own captain, Captain Ketsi Alam Vaskila Siyai.
Okay.
I'm sorry, Siya.
Siya.
Yeah. Who then smuggled into this ship the virus in canisters. And Ketsi put these canisters around the cryopods of the Drell who are most outgoing because they would be the ones most likely to spread it.
That's smart. But wait, why would the captain of the Ark want to kill everybody on the Ark?
Because it wasn't meant to kill everybody. Even though it almost did kill everyone on the Ark, it was targeted at the Salarians, the humans, the Asari, and the Turians, all of the council races. Because if it could decimate their numbers, it would give the Koryans a higher chance of supremacy and not living out a second-tier citizenship status when they finally got to the new galaxy. They would no longer be, you know, cast down into the shadows of society. They wouldn't be treated like you know, nomads and filthy criminals and awful, untouchable parts of society. Mm-hmm. They wouldn't be treated like that. So that was the thinking behind this before it grew wildly out of control and nearly killed everyone. I think 20,000 people on the Koryan arc. And the ending to that book, I won't spoil. So if you're interested in the ending to it, then go read it. Otherwise, you're going to have to wait for us to cover it in its own episode. But fun fact, Yorick's final words before succumbing to the disease are, "With infinite grief and friendship, now cracks a noble heart. Good night, sweet prince, and flights of angels sing thee to thy rest."
Perfect. Perfect. Yeah. Okay. Well, that, man, that was a trip. Okay, so let's move on. What about what about the disease that Thane has? Like, how rare is it? And, like, we know it's not contagious.
It's not. And that's one of the first questions that Shepard asks as well. Like, right. Do I need to quarantine you? Right. This is a genetic one that only affects the Drell, including our beloved Thane, of course, who ultimately dies from it.
Well, unless it was my first playthrough and then I got him killed on the mission.
Oh, my gosh.
Remember that? Yeah. Anyway.
Well,
he was my love interest at the same time.
Wow.
It was very tragic.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, it's tragic.
We've talked about this. It was very tragic. But yeah. Okay. So if he doesn't.
You steal a kill from Kepril syndrome.
Yeah.
Essentially, it prevents the hemoglobin in his blood from carrying the oxygen. And in the end stages, patients suffocate.
Yeah. Like from the inside, like in their blood suffocate.
It's a little unclear. I was reading up on it. One comparison I read, you know, compared it to not carrying the oxygen in the blood. Another one just said that it prevents Drell's lungs from properly oxygenating blood. So,
right. So no matter how much they breathe the air, the oxygen in the air doesn't actually make it to the places in their body that needs it.
Yeah, they're being suffocated.
Right.
And it came from the Drell's mass migration to the Hanar world, which was a completely different environment. Mm-hmm. The longer that Drell spent in the humidity of Kage, it inexorably eroded the capacity for a Drell's lungs to take in oxygen and it damaged other organs in the process. And eventually, of course, that leads to death. And there's no cure. There's no cure for Kepril syndrome. There are scientists on Kage, Hanar, who are working on creating a genetic adaptation, whatever that may mean. But Thane tells us that, you know, even if there is a cure, it's not going to be until long after I'm gone. Mm-hmm. So, And a little bit of a sad fact, it is the leading cause of death for Drell on Kage.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah. So, couple of bonus diseases to not leave you on a very depressing note.
If you didn't get enough diseases, here's some more.
You remember that scale itch from Mass Effect 2? And Morden brings it up just very briefly as a side remark in conversation. He says, "Scale itch presented on Normandy. It's a sexually transmitted disease from Varen. Implications unpleasant."
That's all we know.
So someone's been having sex with Varen. Right. And herpes. Herpes exists in Mass Effect. You might be happy to know that.
Mm-hmm. There's just a kidding. Few different strands.
Well, it's not that herpes. Okay. It is, I was teasing, it is chicken pox and shingles.
Awesome. Which is terrible, by the way.
Yeah, I hope I never have shingles, but I did have chicken pox as a child.
I had shingles the second semester of college. Second year, first semester of college during finals. Whew. Yeah, it was like,
that sounds hellish.
Yeah, I was like, why do I have flu symptoms? I woke up and I was like, why do I have flu symptoms? And then like I had like a weird little rash on my front and my back, like right at the same spot, like right in the left side of my chest, almost like where your heart is. And then on the back. And I was like, what the heck? And then Went and got it checked out, and it was like, it was shingles. Like, I guess the stress of school, like, made the virus come back, and it infected the nerves, like, right there through the middle of my body. And so I still get like pains as I get older. The pains, like, yeah, like right through the middle. Yeah. It's not good.
This is what I have to look forward to as I get older.
Yeah. If shingles never manifests itself. But it might. The virus is in you if you've had chicken pox. It's the same virus.
I did. Yeah. I had chicken pox.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I had actually a unique case of chicken pox when I was a child. I got a chicken pox on my eyeball.
Oh, weird and gross.
I remember it hurt to sleep.
I bet that was like weird and itchy and you can blink and yeah.
Exactly. Anyway. It hurt to sleep. And so I'm really hoping I don't get shingles of the fucking eyes. That sounds terrible.
That seems very rare, but I don't know that that'll happen. But yeah, now that we've thoroughly grossed out our audience, what are we doing coming up? What do we got?
Okay, so I wanted to save the grossest for last, right?
Oh,
In terms of the lore topic episodes of this sub-series on medicine.
It gets even worse, everybody.
No, not yet. Not.
Well, it will get worse.
The diseases were the grossest topic in this sub-series of episodes medicine.
Got it.
But we are potentially going to have on a special guest in the near future to help us really recap and seal off this sub-series of episodes on the medicine of Mass Effect.
Nice. Yeah. So if that works out, then you're going to see us with a guest on a future episode. So very cool. Well, thanks for joining us, everyone. Sam, you got any other stuff going on you want to share?
I do. So, as I had mentioned earlier, I've gotten a lot of new toys and tools to play with on my new streams. I've got Buttsbot on my stream. He occasionally pops in and mocks you and replaces one word or two in your comment on chat with the word butt.
Nice.
The best one I've had so far was someone asked how the gameplay was of a game that I was playing, and then Buttsbot says, "How's the putts play?" it's childish, but it's funny. And so I also have the new mixer, which I'm enjoying. I'm tinkering with it to try to optimize the audio. So if anyone with a very acute ear is listening today and thinks, "Oh, Legend sounds different," that's why. But I've got that. I've got all these fun sound effects on here that I love playing on the streams, and I think I played one even during this episode. I will be streaming Thursdays and Saturdays, Mass Effect Andromeda Thursdays, and the original trilogy with Neutral Shepherd on Saturdays. And you can find me on Twitch and Twitter at N7 The Legend.
Nice. And you can always join us for our live shows, usually on Fridays, but today is a Tuesday night over on twitch.tv/robotsradio, where this show and a bunch of other of the shows I do all stream. So come join us over there as well. And if you're looking for other podcasts about either Mass Effect or any other game series or other stuff at all, go to robotsradio.net. Check out my other shows, my other lore casts, anything else. If you're looking for more content, lots of awesome stuff for you to get into over there. And that's going to do it for this week. Thanks everybody for tuning in, chat. Thank you for being here. Stay safe out there and try not to contract any of these diseases like scale itch. Or blow up into blue paste. All right, we'll see you guys next time. Bye, everybody.
Thanks for tuning in to the Mass Effect Lorecast. We'd love to hear your opinion and thoughts on the lore of Mass Effect. Reach out to us on Twitter at Mass Effect Cast, or check out the Robots Radio Discord. Also, you can send us an email at masseffectlorecast@gmail.com.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply. As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.